Welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. On the weekend, we were treated to yet another card on Yas Island, where we saw a new flyweight champion crowned as Tyson Figueiredo absolutely dismantled Joseph Benavidez. Today, we'll be recapping a few fights from the event and then previewing this weekend's card, where the pride of Liverpool, Darren the Gorilla Till, takes on the former middleweight champion, Robert the Reaper Whittaker, in the headline bout. I'm Jake Jones, and my co-host this week, he's a familiar voice to you all, it's our guy, Liam Heffernan. How are you doing, man?
Yes, I am good. Do you know what? This has been a hell of a Fight Island, hasn't it?
Oh my God, tell me about it. Fight Island has been amazing. I like having midweek cards as well, just because it gives us something to watch, as I said, throughout the week. But overall, just Fight Island, the experience that has been awesome. And I've also been very happy to see on the cards a lot of European talent. And I just like to see, as I said, I think even next week we've got about 3 or 4 European talents on there. And the same a couple of weeks ago, we had about 5 or 6 people from the UK fighting.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see that. And just for all of you listening, later on we will be speaking to the man who's opening this weekend's UFC show, one of the UK's finest MMA talents, Nathaniel the Prospect Wood. So keep an eye out for that, guys. We're going to release it as Ultimate MMA Extra, but that is all to come later on the show. So first and foremost, Liam, what did you think of last weekend's card?
It was a good card, wasn't it? It was very good. I mean, having a title fight is always a great way to cap off an event. Being a vacant title, they both had a lot to fight for. And considering what transpired before with Figueiredo missing weight, I think there was a lot of there was just a lot going on, and there's a lot to unpack there. But what a fight! I mean, the main card was brief, but it was a great card.
Yeah, well, I agree. Overall, actually, I thought it was a pretty good card. And I genuinely thought that the card, all the fights delivered exactly what we expected, really. For me, let's open up then and talk about, for me, what was the fight of the night? Mark Cherkasy versus Rafael Fiziev.
Yes.
What a brawl this was. I mean, I was so shocked watching this. First of all, Mark Cherkasy is no joke in any shape or form because he's striking so quick. He's next level. But man, did Fiziev come in there and just show he is different class above the rest. Like, oh my God. I'd seen a lot on Fiziev prior to this bout. And about him, because I believe he's a coach at Tiger Muay Thai. So I hadn't really seen Fiziev fight before, but I knew who he was. And he put on an absolute Muay Thai masterclass. As I said, he's a striking coach at Tiger Muay Thai. And he, of course, because of that, you expect him to be very polished. But this was just elite-level striking that really shone on the night. Mark had his moments when he caught Rafael with a punch in round 3, I think, that genuinely made such clean contact and made a sound that just rattled through the arena. But besides that, Fiziev just had so many highlights from the night.
Yeah, it was such a good fight, and I think it says so much for Fiziev that he made Cherkasy look fairly amateur at times.
Yep.
And there were moments when he was able to explode a little bit and really attack Fiziev. But for the most part, this was a bit of a masterclass from Fiziev in just how to outfight someone else. And
exactly.
He played Cherkasy at his own game. And I think it was great to watch, maybe not from a British fan's perspective, because I think we were all rooting for Mark. But you've got to give credit where credit's due.
Well, from an MMA fan's perspective, I don't care if you're British or not, you've got to appreciate what happened there.
Exactly.
I mean, his body kicks just cracking into Mark's ribs, and his elbows and his punches, they just seemed to land whenever he threw them.
Yeah.
But the main talking point as well, sorry, was the dodge that he did when he entered the Matrix. Like, what the hell? Like, so genuinely, if you look up his name now, if you look up Fiziev, the first thing that comes up is the Matrix, and then about 4 search engines, like, search opportunities, I guess, down is the lean as well. So
yeah.
he's becoming known for that, and I just find that absolutely brilliant. It genuinely demonstrates top level Muay Thai striking that we don't always see in the UFC, and Fiziev was the teacher here. It was so good. And another thing I want to point out as well is the striking differences were actually quite close in the fight. So Mark landed 73 strikes and 68 of those were significant. And Fiziev landed 82 strikes, with 78 of those being significant. So this just shows how good these guys actually are.
Yeah.
To have only 4 or 5 of your strikes be unsignificant is absolutely incredible. And these two genuinely put on a performance that for me, without a doubt, deserved that 50k bonus, the Fighting Night bonus that they got.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And Fizev has established himself well and truly as a prospect now, because Gekazi is no joke, and the fact that it was Fight of the Night, I think, was well deserved. They both put everything in that octagon, and like I said before, like, there are times when Gekazi just looked like he was being outfought, but you know, the stats speak for themselves. He gave as good as he got, but I think when Fizev was on form, he was just in another league.
Exactly. You say he gave as good as he got, but what can you do when you're up against a guy like Fizev?
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing. Is it's not doubting Gekazi's ability at all. He's phenomenal. He's so quick. And genuinely, I think Gekazi outstrikes pretty much anyone else there. But the fact is, Fizev just looked... As I said, you can tell why he is the coach of Tiger Muay Thai, because he's just so, so clean, so crisp.
Yeah. There was a body shot during that fight that just echoed around the place. It was insane.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about another bout then that was pretty much the complete opposite. The shock co-main event where Jack Hermansson submitted Kelvin Gastelum in just over a minute of the very first round. I mean, for me, what more is there to say about this fight? Other than, what's next for these guys? The fight had its elements that we called, basically. We both said that Hermansson has an unorthodox submission game. So when he's... looks like that someone's pressuring him, he's usually kind of able to pull off a finish there, and that's what he showed, and fair play to him for doing it. He heel hooked Kelvin for the finish. But for me, I guess the main talk about is what follows this now. So Kelvin is on a 3-fight losing streak. Now, don't get me wrong, he's lost to the very best, but he needs a good matchup now to get him going again. What I'd like to see for Kelvin is Yoel Romero next, because people may say that's feeding him to the Lions, but I think he needs to go for broke now. As I said, you're on a 3-fight losing streak, but Yoel is on a 2-fight losing streak.
Yeah.
And Yoel's got Uriah Hall. Yoel versus Uriah Faber would be very mismatched. But Uriah Hall next. So I think Yoel wins that match against Hall. I think he would probably KO him. But I think it still makes sense for him and Gassum to face off after that, because they're both relatively similar in where they are in the division.
Yeah.
And also, they're both smaller guys for the middleweight division in terms of their height. They're both good wrestlers, and they've got very different striking games, which is why I think it's going to be interesting. I just think that, as I said, someone like Kelvin is an asset to the sport, and if he was out of the UFC, it would be a massive shame, because he's too good to not be in there. Mm. But equally, as I said, you go on a 3-fight losing streak, you can't really now argue much more for where you want to be in that division. And I said, if Yoel's on a 2-fight losing streak once more to some of the best people in the division, Yoel might pick a win over Hall. What does that do? I don't even know if Hall's ranked. So why do you, like I said, I don't want people looking at it going, oh, that's gonna pull Sang off. No. As I said, Gastelum versus Romero, though, starts making sense on the winner of that is likely to get a top 5, etc. And that's where I think this needs to go.
Yeah, I think that fight is a really good shout. But I think it's make or break for both fighters. You know, Gastelum being on three fight losing streak. This is a guy that is not going to want to see himself just become a prelim, an early prelim guy for the up and comers. So if that fight was made with Romero and he lost, I could see him retiring. Similarly, Romero, if he carries on in the form he's on, you've got to think that he's only a couple of fights away from retirement. Because Romero is one of the older fighters now as well.
I believe he's 42 or 43. Yeah. So, yeah. And so I totally agree with you. It's kind of a fight where people, they need to win it. Because also, you said as well that these fighters aren't going to want to go on the prelims. And also, the UFC can't afford for them to go on the prelims, because, understandably, these guys are going to be wanting a lot of money.
Mm.
Now, if you're on, say, 200 grand a fight, and then you fight in the prelims, they say, we'll give you 50, 60, you're probably going to say no to that.
Yeah.
But then equally, you're not going to get a bout. And also, I genuinely, as you said, Yoel's getting older. I think he's still great to have, but at some point he's going to retire. And no one, I think if Yoel leaves, I don't really, maybe Bellator invest in him, but other than that, I don't really see who does, and I don't see why they would.
Yeah.
And the same goes for Kelvin. If Kelvin left, I don't see him going to someone like Bellator or ONE Championship. It's just not, as I said, he fits the UFC scene, but he needs to really prove why he's in there now. And he's the younger of the two. He's 28 years old, so I think he needs to do something. But let's talk about Jack as well. I mean, Jack went and won that fight. But
yeah.
I don't actually agree with his post-fight call-out. I know he wants the winner of Till versus Whittaker, but I think he gets the loser of that fight. I think it begs the question where Cannoneer fits into all of this as well. that for me, I see the winner of Saturday night facing Adesanya next.
Absolutely.
If that is, if Adesanya remains the champion or not, I don't know, because he's got a tough test against Costa now.
Yeah.
But as I said, for me, the winner of Saturday night makes sense either way to who gets the title shot next.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think this is why Saturday is such a high-stakes fight, because I think both fighters would feel entitled to calling out the champ if they win it.
Well, exactly. I'm not being funny. Let's not deny that if Till wins on Saturday night, the UFC want to push him for a belt, because he will become the second English fighter, or the UK fighter, I believe, to get the belt.
Yeah.
So there is no doubt to me that they will push him for that if he wins. But also, I want to talk about Bobby Knuckles. It really annoys me. So, to me, I find it very frustrating. Like, I think people do him dirty, because he was on a 9-fight winning streak before he lost to Adesanya. And now he's not got his rematch. He's not getting, and now he's fighting Till, who, as I said, is arguably a tough matchup for him, and maybe is kind of going to push Till for the title. So, as I said, for me, we'll break down Till versus Whittaker later, but overall, I don't see Hermanson's call out happening, the fact that he gets the person for the next shot or anything like that. No, he will face someone next. As I said, Cannonier is also now in that argument as well somewhere. Potentially gets one of the losers from it. But overall, I think Hermanson gets the loser of Saturday night's bout.
I completely agree. Yeah, he's another 2, maybe 3 fights away from a title shot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, let's talk about our final fight from recapping last weekend's event. The main event between Device and Figueiredo and Josef Benavidez. Liam, what on earth happened here?
Oh, it was just... I think it was everything that we thought might happen, but everything we hoped wouldn't, because this had such a good 5-round brawl potential, because Figueiredo is just such a heavy hitter, and Benavidez is just a good fighter to watch. He's got the entertainment value. And I think we were all hoping it was going to go longer than like 4 minutes. But, you know, kudos to Figueiredo. He won the last fight, and he won it after missing weight, so he came under a lot of fire. He made weight this time. He did everything he needed to, and he absolutely demolished Benavidez. I don't see a third fight happening. Why would it? I think now you've got to look at who can take him on.
Absolutely. So what I would say, we got things very, very wrong. We predicted Benavidez would make adjustments and that Figueiredo would be caught out.
We did, yeah.
This was the complete opposite of what happened. This was the first fight just enhanced on another level.
Yeah.
Literally, Figgy came in there and just demolished one of the division's greatest fighters ever. Stats have it down as 2 knockdowns. I believe we all saw it as 3.
Yeah.
But he looked comfortable in there. He looked dangerous, and then he became the first man to submit Benavidez in an MMA bout as well.
It's crazy.
He just looked so, so, so good. And I think we can only really talk about what's next for him now. So for me, I think he gets a huge fight after this. I think Cejudo, Demetrius Johnson, Cruz, Cody Garbrandt, or anyone that's willing to challenge him, or he goes up for a double belt, I think he gets that type of fight where he gets a star fight now. He gets a mega fight. I think he's a very attractive opponent for pretty much anyone to challenge because of his style. But also, if he goes in there and wins, he can also cement himself as possibly the flyweight division's most dangerous fighter ever.
Yeah.
I do think maybe Askarov, who fought a Pantoja, I think he could be a bit of a problem in that picture because he's undefeated, he looks very good, and got a very dominant win over Pantoja. But for me, I think Figgy gets offered the super fight first, and if not, he gets Askarov next. Or Askarov faces Benavidez. Because, as I said, I think Figgy's now put himself in that position where you go, well, he's just destroyed Benavidez twice. He's now the champion. He's 19-1. I mean, as I said, if someone else wants to challenge him, he would probably put himself in that position now to say he wants a super fight where he gets a lot of money for it as well. And becomes, I think a lot of people now have their eyes on Figueiredo.
Yeah. Yeah, to be honest, looking at the rankings, I don't see who in that division right now could take him on based on his performance against Benavidez. And I think the fight to make, whilst the hype is so high, you try and get Cejudo back, you pay him whatever he wants paying, and you make that fight happen, because that is a pay-per-view headliner.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. As I said, So this is what I mean. He needs a pay-per-view headliner. He needs a super fight, and Cejudo fits that. We know Cejudo can make flyweight, but also to chuck out there, Cody Garbrandt has said in the past that he can definitely make flyweight and that he would be interested in doing so. I think that's a tough fight for either of the fighters, but once more, it's a super fight. And I'm not saying Cody's deserving of that, but I do think Figueiredo is deserving of a super fight, a headline bout that I think he's going to get. And then, as I said, if not, then we look at actually in the division, as you said, who can actually beat him. But at the moment, I think the way it stands for the next couple of months is that Figueiredo is going to be saying, no, I either want Cejudo or I want a fight where people are going to look at me, where people are going to focus on me.
Yeah.
And as I said, I'm not sure Askarov does that yet, but in the future, I think Askarov is a very good bout for him.
Yeah, I'm not really sure there's anyone in that division that would live up to the sort of billing that Figueiredo could demand at the moment. And he had such a good fight. I think you're right. Cejudo is the one to fight him next. And I think if Dana White has any sense, he throws a blank check at him and he just makes it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is our recap of last weekend's event complete. Now we're moving on to a preview of Saturday night's UFC card, the final on Fight Island, July 25th, where Darren Till and Robert Whittaker face off for likely the number one contender spot. And God, we have a lot of fights to talk about. Well, firstly, though, let's talk about the biggest news of this week. Was Reese McKee stepping in to face Kazmat Chimaev on a week's notice? This fight will have a crazy amount of eyes on it. Yeah. And that's for a variety of different reasons. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think it's very brave of Reese to step in on short notice. When you consider that
I say Chimaev, you say Chimaev. Yeah. Let's say whatever.
You know, he's on a 7-fight win streak. He only fought, 2 weeks ago?
Hey, 10 days between 10 days, these two fights. Geez. That is it. So as in between when he beat John Phillips to when he fights Reese McKee would be 10 days.
Yeah, that is crazy. But I think, I guess it could work two ways. You know, the fact that he won in the second round means he's probably not going to be totally gassed. He's going to be ready to fight again. And fair dues for taking a fight with 10 days. But I think he's been on Fight Island this whole time. He's going to have adjusted. He's going to be training. The odds have got to be in his favour. I think whatever happens, you don't take a fight on a week's notice if you're going to just go there and try and ride out a decision and not get finished. So I think McKee is going to go there and bring everything. Of course you would. It's going to be a good fight.
Well, first of all, I'll give Kamayev some props here because later on I'm going to give some reasons why I think Reese McKee could do this. But overall, Chimaev has the chance to make history here for doing being the first fighter to win a fight after a 10-day turnaround. And he looks incredibly dominant. There's no doubt. People label him the Khabib 2.0, and you can see why. He's got a fantastic grappling game, and his fight against Phillips went exactly the same way as Khabib fights go. He just dominated him throughout the entire thing and was able to hold him down. But I think a big hindrance for Kazmat is that, yes, he's had 10 days to prepare for this. I know he's had time before that, but 10-day turnaround isn't a lot. But also, he has to make it weight at 170 now, not 185 pounds. So that's a big difference. And that's something that's certainly going to be on his mind in them 10 days. And he's coming in against a guy who's not like Phillips at all. Phillips is a small guy for the 185-pound division. He stands at 5'11". Chimaev is 6'2", and you could see that Chimaev was able to smother Phillips throughout the fight. Even when he got him down, he just held on to him. Now, McKee is said to be between 6'1 and 6'3". I've seen a few different reports there, but either way, the point is he's a lot bigger in terms of his height and his frame. So I think he won't be able to smother and cover McKee as much as he was able to against Phillips. So I think he's got a different fight in his hands. And it's also worth noting the style of fighter that McKee is. He's not like John, where he swings heavy and relies on KO. McKee's quicker and sharper than John is. And that's with all due respect to John. John has something like, in 29 fights, 27 KOs, something like that, or an 88% KO record. He's ridiculous on how much power he has in them hands. But as I said, when you come up against a guy like Chimaev, where they're going to drain all your energy, it doesn't always work. Now, as I said, Reese is very different to that. McKee's been waiting for this opportunity his whole life, and I think he's going to cause him some problems. I spoke to Reese in May, I think it was, and he said a few things that was worth noting. First of all, he said that he is going to be the next Cage Warriors guy to join the UFC, and boy, was he right. He has that confidence in himself, which I know sounds stupid, but when you come up against a guy like Kimaev, if that's your first fight, his reply the other day when he got told he was joining, he went, "I don't know, I don't care, let's get this thing done." So it's not being arrogant necessarily, but it's about having that confidence in yourself and not going, "Oh shit, is that the guy who did that the other day? Oh, maybe I don't want my debuters against it." Do you know what I mean? He just went, yeah, "Nope, we're going straight for it." But also, he said to me, throughout lockdown, he's kept his weight down and he's trained. So I think he won't be actually suffering that much from ring rust. And in general, I think he's going to come in good shape and ready to go. For me, I think the key for Reese is to utilise his frame and use his elbows and try and KO Kazmat. I don't see him out-grappling Kazmat in terms of his strength and everything like that. Kazmat's so ridiculously good at what he does. But I do think he could catch him in a guillotine as well. And that's what I mean about using his frame, using his height, and being able to either catch him in a standing guillotine when Kazmat comes in, or the other thing is, take a note from Modestus Bukauskas' book. When Kazmat shoots, throw a knee or throw an elbow up against the cage that will slow Kazmat down, or even potentially hurt him badly. This is what I mean, is using that kind of that tool to build to be able to, as I said, either get a knee in there, get an elbow in there, or try and use that leverage to get the guillotine in. And I think I think it's clear that the game plan Kimaev is going to come out with. So Reese needs to be unpredictable and catch out this incredibly skilled fighter. If I was to be completely honest, and I love McKee, but I think Kazmat will win this fight, as I think it's such a tough debut for Reese. But people shouldn't be shutting Reese out if he doesn't win this either. He will become a star, and he's so dangerous in the welterweight division. And my heart's telling me I want Reese to win, but my head's telling me I think Kazmat's going to get it. But people should not rule McKee out. He's the only man to knock out Jai Herbert. He's the only man to have beaten Jai Herbert as well. Reese McKee is no joke.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to be rooting for McKee, but you've got to say, looking at the stats, Kimaev is the favourite here. But I think one thing's probably for certain, that neither of these fighters like going more than one round if they can avoid it. So the chances are this is going to be a quick finish, so don't take your eyes off.
Absolutely. Well, next up is the return of Alexander the Mauler Gustafsson versus Fabricio Werdum. That's at heavyweight as well. How good is this going to be, man?
Yeah, do you know what? I think Gustafsson is... I don't know what to make of this guy. Like he obviously he retired in Sweden last year after he fought Anthony Smith and lost. And now he's come back a year later, moving up a division and taking on someone like Werdum. I think whatever the outcome of this, I think the loser probably is going to retire. I can't imagine that Gustafsson is going to come back, lose, and then keep on fighting. But if he wins, you know, maybe he'll have another fight or two in him. I mean, what's this guy's plan? Do you think he's actually going to try and challenge for the heavyweight now?
Well, maybe I'm overselling it when I say how good is this fight. I do think, for me, basically, I was so sad when I saw Alex retire in Stockholm after his defeat to Anthony Smith. I thought that the division, the UFC as a whole, lost one of the best fighters we had. He's so inspiring to the sport, and he'll forever be a poster boy for it. And that's not trying to be disrespectful when I say that, as in, when you think of the UFC, Gustafsson is one of the first fighters you think about, and that's amazing. I think it's a brilliant decision that he's decided to move up weight, because I think he's going to absolutely obliterate Werdum on Saturday night. And I'll tell you, like, my reasons for it. I know it's a bold statement, but Werdum got the win over Olejczyk a few months back in his return to the sport after, I think it was a 2-year suspension. Now, honestly, I thought this was one of those bouts where a guy was just going to drop first, but it was a matter of who. And when I mean that, it wasn't about, oh, they're slugging out or anything like that. I just thought they look exhausted. They look like they're just going to try and outstrike each other when, I'm not being funny, it wasn't very impressive striking either way. Now, Alexei Fabricio's exchanges were slow shots, but they still managed to catch each other. And the fight was mainly about kind of showing off two experienced veterans of the sport who were primarily known for their submission game. And as I said, that usually you see cancels each other out. When you get two really good people at a certain thing like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it usually cancels each other out and then they go for a striking match. And as I said, I just think... I like Werdum and I like Olejczyk, but to me, it didn't show any dangers in the heavyweight division. Now, the one thing that Fabricio is dangerous with, and there's no doubt about it, is his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu game. It's so, so strong and it's so dangerous. However, let's not forget how good Alex is and how light on his feet Alex is. If you're going to take it from the Vadum fight and how Alex usually fights, I don't see Vadum even getting close to Alex. As I said, he's so light on his feet, and he's basically, I think he'll be able to pick up the win however he wants. I think he can either piece Vadum up throughout the fight and just get a unanimous decision victory, or I see him piece him up and then go for a KO victory. Because as I said, in that fight against Lejic, I was very, very surprised how slow his striking looked. So I think, if Alex comes in there feeling very fit, feeling much better heavyweight, but still doing his very light kickboxing stance and being very, very fast on his feet, I think he'll be able to catch him out. And this is why I think it's such a good move, is because if he beats Vadum, it's going to catapult him up into the division. He's going to hold a win over one of the best sports and the former heavyweight champion. And Vadum was champion, what, 3-4 years ago? So this, I mean, I know that's a while ago, but overall, if you're coming in there and that's who you're taking out on your debut, and you might do it in good fashion, then, as I said, I genuinely think it's a very, very good move for him.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there about Gustafsson. One of the advantages to moving up from light heavyweight to heavyweight is that that is a big difference, and you're going to be lighter, you're going to be faster, you're going to be more agile than the guys who are used to fighting at heavyweight. And I think the key to Alex winning this fight is keeping it on the feet, because, you know, let's not forget he got tapped by Smith. Verdum is also not inexperienced when it comes to submission. I think he'll be trying to take this down to the ground. You know, I think that's going to be where he's a lot more comfortable. If it stays on the feet, as you say, Gustafsson is going to keep it fast. He's gonna dodge, and I think that's where he outstrikes him and potentially gets the knockout. I personally don't think he's going to get the knockout. I think if anything, he's just going to outclass Verdum a bit and get the decision. But I think either way, that's the key to winning.
Yeah, and either way for me, I'm just excited to see Alex Gustafsson at heavyweight.
Yeah,
and the reason I hope he wins isn't just to catapult himself in the division, but because I actually would like Gustafsson's name in them rankings. I think the heavyweight rankings can sometimes be a little bit, not necessarily predictable, but you see the fighters and you go, okay, one of them's a knockout artist, one of them's very good at submissions, one of them's a very good wrestler, but none of them are all around phenomenal. And I think Gustafsson is all around very good.
Yeah,
I think he would offer just something dangerous in there for an intriguing matchup for anyone. Now, let's talk about the main event for Saturday night: Robert the Reaper Whittaker versus Darren the Gorilla Till. Now, I want to go straight in with this because I said about this earlier. I think they've done Bobby Knuckles so, so dirty, the UFC have, because prior to Adesanya, he was on a 9-fight win streak, and in my opinion, was a fantastic champion. So I get that he had his massive injury troubles, but come on, he deserved that rematch. And the UFC did what the UFC do and screwed the guy over to push for fights that will bring more money in. Where is the integrity?
Yeah, I've got a soft spot for Whittaker, purely because the first and only to date live UFC event that I've been to was 2013 in Vegas, 3 years ago. And he fought against Romero for the vacant middleweight belt. And because of that, I'm always quite interested to see Whittaker fight. That being said, I love that they've put him against Till. I do think you're right. I think it was unjust that he didn't get a rematch against Adesanya. But I think winning this fight could give him that rematch. The question is, will he do it? And frankly, you've got Till, who's just moved up a weight class, beat Gastelum, had a great fight against Gastelum. And he's going to be, he's as motivated as Whittaker is to get this win, because either one is getting a title fight next.
Yeah, so I just want to add that I loved Whittaker, and I do think they screwed him completely over. And I feel sorry for the guy. I think he's been done dirty. However, having said all this, I do think it goes downhill from here.
Yeah.
I really like Till at middleweight, and I think it's a very, very good fight for him stylistically. I think he's a fantastic striker, and I think we see him showing this prowess on Saturday night. Robbie struggled massively against Adesanya, just because he couldn't get in the way that he wanted to, and Adesanya did just not make, it sounds awful, but he did make a bit of a joke of the champion, of someone who, as I said, he knocked him down in the first round and then just demolished him in the second. And I think Till offers a very similar fight. I don't know if Till KOs him like Izzy did, but I do think he can rock Bobby and overall get the win by just kind of exhausting him, piecing him up through the fight, and as I said, potentially as well, rocking him a few times so that the ref stops the fight. I see Till winning it. I think he goes on and actually, bold statement, I think he gets the title. I'm not being one of them guys who thinks that Till just supports Till no matter what and because he's English or anything. I see flaws in Till's game. However, I genuinely think if he fights Adesanya, I think Till gets the win. I think Adesanya's brilliant. But I think Till has that striking ability and the power to beat him. I think he could win by points or via a KO, and I'd love to see it happen because as much as I like Adesanya as a champ, I think he's very skilled. I think Till gives him a very hard fight.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you're right. I think if the title fight is Till Adesanya, I think Till wins that. But it's easy to underestimate Adesanya after the Romero fight, but let's not forget he's a great fighter. That being said, I think Till is going to win that fight. If, however, his title fight is against Paulo Costa, I think he's up against a guy who has just this enormous power, and he's a striker, and I think he is going to struggle against Costa.
Mm. So I have another theory about Costa, so it's slightly separate, but I don't think Costa will remain at middleweight for the rest of his career.
Really?
I think he'll be there for a while. He might become the champion there. However, there's a thing about... I think he's banned from fighting in California. I could be wrong with that, but it's because California do this thing that if the next day in your second weigh-in, you weigh something like 15% more than you did previously, if you put that much more weight back on, then they reckon it's dodgy, that they reckon there's either some artificial substances used or in general that you haven't done it then healthily.
Right.
So I think there's going to come a stage where they're going to potentially force, as Costa gets older, force him to go up a division, because there's no doubt as well he's still big for light heavyweight, and the way he fights fits light heavyweight. I think that might be the future for him. But as I said, I genuinely believe you as well. I think he offers Adesanya a hard fight, and I think he offers Till a hard fight. I think he's so, so good.
Yeah, I'd love to see Costa go up to light heavyweight. The problem is, that is such a stacked division at the moment, because Jones is near the end of his reign. I think we can all agree Jones is a year, if that, away from losing the belt to someone. And when he does, you've got this division that's packed with Yan, with Reyes, who knows what Prashak is going to do.
DeSantos,
yeah. And, I mean, I see the reticence in Costa wanting to move into that division. That being said, middleweight's probably no better. So, you know, I guess if you back yourself, you back yourself, right?
Well, exactly. And I think, let's talk back about the bout. I guess, for me, if Whittaker or Till lose, they face Hermanson or Cannonier next. And equally, I think Jared also could be next for Costa versus Adesanya. I don't really know. But for me, the best way this would go is that the winner of this faces probably actually Adesanya next. So that doesn't mean... So even if that's Adesanya as the champion or not, I think the winner of this bout should face Adesanya next. Because if Adesanya beats Costa, Adesanya needs a new challenger. If Costa beats Adesanya, I don't think he's done enough to deserve an immediate rematch.
Yeah.
If Bobby Knuckles didn't get one, then I don't think Adesanya does. And then, as I said, I think the winner of this bout gets Adesanya next regardless. So, before we sign off, I do want to quickly talk about three other fights that we have on this weekend. But we won't break these down as much as we have for the prior fights. Do not worry, we won't burn your ears off. But please do keep an eye out for these bouts. Firstly, I can't wait for the debut of the former Cage Warriors lightweight champion, Jai Herbert. Once more, he's an Englishman who has future champion written all over him. He trains with the Edwards brothers at Renegade Jiu-Jitsu, and he's so, so dangerous. But he does come up against Francisco Trinaldo, which is a fantastic fight. Liam, I don't know what you think about that, but once more, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's another fight of the night contender, right? Bonuses could go easily to them two.
Well, exactly. Well, next up, my second fight to pick from this weekend as well, and as I said, just keep an eye out for it. We have a Friday night bout in Bellator MMA where Ricky Banderas meets Sergio Pettis in their bantamweight title eliminator. What a fight this is. These are two guys who are so dangerous in their very own unique ways, and this is sure to be a highlight reel fight in my opinion. Possibly the winner of this may be the next Bellator bantamweight champion, and over the next few weeks I'll be releasing so many interviews about the future of the stacked bantamweight division. That will be available all with Ultimate MMA, Ultimate MMA Extra, and the podcast itself. Also, featuring on that card that Ricky and Sergio will headline is Cass Bell versus Rofion Stotts. So Cass is undefeated at 5-0. Rofion Stotts is 13-1, I believe, and he trains with at Duke Rufus's gym with Pettis brothers. It's another fight where two stars are going to face off, and genuinely, trust me, You do not want to miss some of the fights on that Bellator card. Their bantamweight division genuinely has so many incredible talents on there. The final thing to mention, the third fight I want to talk about, is Nate Wood, who will be opening Saturday night's card. He's such a great prospect for the UK MMA scene, and I think he deserves a win. I think he will be the future of the sport in the UK. And as I said, we're going to be speaking to him. I'm going to be speaking to him tomorrow morning, and as we'll release that with this podcast. It'll be released as part of Ultimate MMA Extra. But as I said, you're going to want to listen to the interview because Nate is a fantastic guy who'll give you great ins and outs. And also, Nate loves talking about the next fight that he wants. Whether it's Marlon Vera, Sugar Sean, me and Nate will be talking about that tomorrow, so make sure to not miss that. The final thing to mention, they are my three bouts that you guys should watch out for on the weekend, and please do. But the final thing is our fight announcement. I'm sure you'll have all seen, Adesanya and Costa is now being targeted for September the 19th, I believe. That's for the title. And we're going to talk about the August the 1st card, which will be the next card that we will recap, where Holly Holm and Irene Aldana has actually been cancelled today. So this is Wednesday the 22nd. Aldana and Holm has been cancelled for the next Saturday, August the 1st. So Derek Brunson and Edmund Shahbazyan have been pulled up to the main event of that. And that is also a fantastic fight.
Yes, and this literally happens like 2 hours before we recorded this show. So this is, we know very little apart from the poster that the UFC have tweeted. But yeah, Brunson Shahbazyan is the only fight currently announced on the UFC website. That fight alone is enough to get me to watch. I don't care if there's any more because I'm a big, big fan of Edmund Shahbazyan. I think he's got future champion written all over him. I can't wait to see this fight.
Well, one thing to get people excited for that, please do me a favour, go out there and watch Israel Adesanya versus Derek Brunson and the way he finished that fight, and then go and watch Shahbazyan versus Brad Tavares. Watch both of them fights and how they won it. They are so reminiscent of each other, the way the patience of knocking down their opponent and then just piecing them up when they can and then getting a finish in there. Honestly, both of them, the KOs for me are KO within a year contenders. They're so, so skilled in how accurate they are with their striking. And as I said, if you watch Shahbazyan beating Tavares, you'll see how Adesanya beat Brunson there. And once more, if that can happen with Shahbazyan versus Brunson, then I think Shabazian's a very, very exciting prospect for the future. So that is all we have time for on this week's Ultimate MMA podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and make sure to like, listen, subscribe to us. And be sure to tune in next week where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card. As I said, the August the 1st card. But in other news as well, we will also have a new co-host joining us. That doesn't mean that Liam will be leaving us, but we will have a new co-host joining us in next week where we'll join up with the former MTV DJ and now MMA fighter, Sean Gilley.